Welcome to Canucks Central at Noon. Your Vancouver Canucks live here.
Drops off for Horvat, back to Edler, then to Horvat at the slip. He scores! Bo Horvat in overtime!
On the home of hockey, Sportsnet 650.
Landeskog turned it over to Horvat, right to the slip. Pettersson scores! Is there anything this kid can't do?
Here's Scott Rintoul and Mick Nizar.
Canucks just scored another power play goal against Nashville while we were away. 10 for 13, man. How does that happen against one team over a three-game set? Two different coaches, not all the same personnel with Besser out of the lineup. How does that happen, Bick?
Different goalies. Just doesn't matter. Just did not matter.
Almost 77%. And that is the season series with the Nashville Predators, ladies and gentlemen. You can talk about the high danger chances, and there were plenty of them again in the second period last night. And Jacob Markstrom had to be remarkable once again for a long stretch of time. Bottom line is the power play was so good, none of it mattered against the Nashville Predators this year. Canucks sweep the season series, get a much needed win, and maintain their perch atop the Pacific Division.
Especially when you consider some of the news today. Like, Connor McDavid's going to be out for a little while. What's going on in Arizona? All the injury stuff. Like, last night, it helps fix what happened on Saturday. Right? You shrunk that gap. Calgary caught up to you of all teams. This was an important win. This is a team that, okay, worst case scenario, if things really started to slide, and we're talking about wild card versus being the Pacific Division, you know, who's one of those teams that's going to catch you? Nashville. Well, you got that W over them, really opens that gap over them. And, yeah, it's getting harder and harder for a team like Nashville to jump back into this playoff race.
Yeah, it certainly is. And it's funny how quickly things change. Nashville came into this Western Road swing playing better, started it with a win in Winnipeg, followed it up with a win in Calgary, up 2-0 on Edmonton in Edmonton, and then that game gets away. Starts with a lucky bounce, ends up being Leon Draisaitl taking over in the third period. And then they limp into Vancouver only to get spanked by the Canucks power play. Once again, Dan Hamhuis was on the program yesterday morning, and we talked mostly about the Sedins, but we did talk about the Canucks, and he said, yeah, they're a good young team. I mean, their power play's been great. I think it's something like 7-for-9 against it. It was actually 8-for-9, and then it got worse. It ended up going 10-for-11 before the Nashville Predators managed to get through two man advantages of the Canucks without conceding a goal. Sometimes you just can't explain it. Sometimes there's that one team that gives you trouble. People remember that year the Canucks missed the playoffs way back, 2007, 2008. The Blues were awful. Blues were a terrible team, and they beat the Canucks every single game. And that you can easily look at that being the difference between the Canucks getting in and the Canucks not. And I know the Canucks returned the favor on the Blues a few years later. It's funny how sometimes you just don't have a great matchup against a particular team in a particular season.
Yeah, it's the power play one is especially unique, right? Because it's so dominant versus one team over, you know, it's not a one-game sample. It's, you know, three games. That's reasonable when it comes to just power play time. That's what's so fascinating. And I think it's just been the up-and-down nature of this Pred season. Every time we think, oh, they finally figured it out, they don't. Every time we think, oh, you know, they're going to start turning it around now, they don't. And it feels like Vancouver's, you know, scheduling quirk, whatever you want to call it, feels like they are there every time they meet the Predators, and they're just able to take advantage. That Preds team, it's like you see some of the firepower. Like, that second period was really impressive. I know Rocco Grimaldi looking up at the stars, thinking like, man, how do I get this? It was an easy chance for me, and so many other Preds had opportunities to bury chances in that second period. So you see the high end. It feels like they could be very, you know, Canucks-esque of they can dominate periods and get away, but something's just not clicking there. I know Ryan Ellis is out. They haven't gotten goaltending, but that team overall has a couple issues.
And we're going to talk a lot more about what happened last night. We're going to make way in a couple minutes' time for Michael Samuelson to join us, former Vancouver Canuck, former line mate of the Steens, former teammate with them on their gold medal-winning team at the 2006 Olympics, which was obviously massive for that country, certainly for members of that team as well. Before we get to him, what did you think of all of the surrounding elements of last night's game? It was Legends Night. Mm-hmm. Trevor Linden was back in the building.
Yeah, actually really, you know, just, you know, not just the ceremony itself. You don't really think about the banners always being the current colors.
Oh, that was a big deal when they were unveiled.
Yeah, but you know,
and then people just kind of let it go.
It becomes normalized, right?
They wanted what they saw last night. People wanted that.
It was as soon as you see it, and if you weren't at the game last night or the next time you're going to Rogers Arena, it pops right away. You notice right away, and there's just a different emotion in it. And I think that's a good part to what was done last night. It puts you in a place of being in 1994, in 1980, whatever era you attach yourself to, seeing those colors really struck home.
Michael Samuelson was attached to the era that saw the Vancouver Canucks go to the Stanley Cup Final in 2010, 2011.
And the siren last night.
Yeah, he was.
Giving her.
And he joins us here on Canucks Central. Michael, thank you very much for doing this. How are you?
I'm good, thanks. How are you guys?
Hey, we're doing very well. It was the first night in what is a week-long celebration for the Sedins. How did you enjoy yourself at the game last night?
Oh, it's always great to be back. Unfortunately, I wasn't here for that long, but I really like the city and I like the people here. So it was great to see a good team play. So it's always nice.
Yes, they're getting back to being a good team after a few years of not being one. When you think back to that free agency decision you made and you were trying to decide where to go, how much did Daniel and Henrik Sedin have to do with your decision to come to Vancouver?
No, quite a lot, for sure. First of all, I spoke to them, and we played together in the national team before that. So I didn't know anything about the city of Vancouver, but I knew they had a good team going, and they were hungry for more. They've been knocking on the door a little bit to playoffs, and they were not all the way up there, but all those things made a big decision. And Dan and Hank obviously had a big part of it too.
You mentioned playing on the national team with them. You win the gold medal with the Sedins back in 2006 at the Olympics. Where does that accomplishment rank in your career highlight?
Oh, that was like, I was such an in a bubble those years. Like I had no clue, obviously, we're going to win. And first of all, that I'm going to make the team as well and make it with like superstars like Danny and Hank and Peter Forsberg and Mats Sandin. It was like, just so nice to be there, first of all. And yes, how I rank it, I was fortunate to win more great stuff than just the Olympics. It's so hard to rank it, but it's, obviously it's way up there. And not only did we win, we had a great time together. And to share those moments with Dan and Hank, I'm always grateful for that.
What did you take away, you know, from that experience of playing with them in 2006? Just, you know, how they prepare, how they're so easy to play with. What was, you know, your biggest takeaway?
Yeah, first of all, easy to play with. I'm not so sure about that all the time.
All right, well, then was it easier to play with them or against them?
No, it was with them for sure. When you play with them, you can almost prepare yourself to have a lot of offensive moments in the opponent's zone. But to play with them too, sometimes I was frustrated. That's with Danny to Hank, Hank to Danny, even if I was wide open. It's like, okay, what do I have to do to get the puck? But sooner or later, I got the puck, and I was kind of the shooter on the line because I had to be. Danny shot a puck, but Hank never shot the puck. So I think you have to think almost the way they think, like try to somehow get into their brain and how they think in the game. So where can I find my holes and where can I be at what time? And that's not that easy to get off a good start, like right from the get-go. But once you figure that one out, it gets much easier.
In conversation with Michael Samuelson here on Canucks Central, he joins us on Sedin Week. You played on those highly skilled Detroit Red Wings teams before joining the Canucks. How did Daniel and Henrik's skill compare to some of the skill you saw on those Detroit teams?
They were skilled. They were almost like different kind of skills. Like if you look at Datsyuk, he can do amazing stuff. I know Dan and Hank can do amazing stuff too, but they They were thinking the game. They always tried to outthink the opponents, almost like a chess game. If you look at Dan and Hank, don't take anything away from them. It was not like they were that flashy, or they actually Danny did a couple of goals behind the legs. But other than that, like they just outsmart them, the opponents, not with overly much speed, not with like a hard shot or anything like that. But they always had a plan, and they were almost like zigzagging through their defense, and so it's different kind of skills that way. And they obviously were really, really successful that way. But they were thinking like, okay, this is our way. This is how we're gonna be successful. And that's one thing they never. They always try to figure out how they gonna be successful. Should say that they never stopped and was never satisfied with that. So through their whole careers, they tried to become better, every year.
Canucks fans are happy this never happened, but how would they have fit in on those Detroit Red Wings teams with all that skill, a team that played the game a different way than many others in the league?
No, I think it was fitting just fine. When I was in Detroit, we played a puck possession game, and so did Dan and Hank. So that had absolutely been no problem. And what I also take away from it, I think you heard this before, like the human beings that had been, they really humble, and they like normal guys, and they don't see themselves as any kinds of stars. And that's another great thing with them, because if you see yourself that way, you always want more, and you never, like I said before, you're never satisfied.
Well, you mentioned just them as human beings, you know, and going from, you know, Detroit to Vancouver, did you notice similarities between the culture of the two organizations and how the standard was set by these two players here and all the greats in Detroit?
Yeah, I think like this. Like, when I went from Detroit, I was, I learned, when I came here, I should say, like, I realized I learned a lot from Detroit. Like, it was all the players with Chelios and Lidstrom, Iserman, Draper, Maltby, and those guys, they knew what it took to actually be successful and win more than once. When I came here, this group was hungry like for success, but they kind of didn't really realize how to be it. Like I remember I came here, a lot of things were going on after the whistles, for sure. Like, this is how we play tough, like a glove in the face, or like, obviously, you get some penalties for that. And even with that said, like, we were successful. But things like that, you can't do that in the playoffs, for example. And that's something I think I brought a little bit to the table and said, like, okay, we can't play exactly the way we play, but you saw a really talented team who if we change a little bit of the mindset, can be really successful, and we was when we came here, and we had a great team, obviously, and it was so close to go all the way.
Well, you mentioned just, you know, that they had a certain style of play that they almost felt it was their way to do it, and you know, across the league, do you feel like players respect that more, kind of a unique playing style? And I know it's a combined thing, but, you know, we revere that here. Just, you know, they almost formed a new way to play. It was like a choreographed dance, sometimes, to how they played.
Yeah, I would say so. When they came into the league, it was a lot of, it was a lot of hookings, and the slashing was loud. Through their careers, they went faster and faster, and like really fast game in the end, I would say. And I think it's fascinating to see that yes, fast and speed is great to have, but you can be really successful if you actually think in the game too. So I think the game nowadays, it's fun to watch, but also today's players have something to learn from, like the old schools. And when I say old school, that's definitely Danny and Hank. They played a great way, not that fast game all the time, and that was obviously, they were really successful with that.
What do you think today's players could take specifically from the Sedins and even just that era of hockey in the National Hockey League that they could better utilize in today's game?
Yeah, like I mentioned there before, like they don't like if you pace yourself once in a while to see what the situation is and where players are around you, I think they can benefit from that and like find holes and actually take care of the puck. And one thing who stands out for me with both Danny and Hank, that's how they receive the puck. It didn't take any time, even if it was like bad pass, like for them to get it on the stick and had control over it. And obviously that speed, I should say, that brings a fast game to that. And that's how they can play to each other that much, and pass and their passing was great. So yeah, doesn't have to go all that fast all the time.
Michael Samuelsson in conversation with us here on Canuck Central. You mentioned some of the great players that have come out of Sweden. They certainly qualify on that list. How are they viewed in Sweden relative to some of the other hockey stars that have come out of your country?
Oh, they're viewed up right up there, I should say. Definitely, when they came home and won 06 and also 12, I think, they had a really big impact on the World Championships 2012. They played decent before they got there in the middle of the tournament, and when they came, they turned everything around and they won gold. So with that year coming in, you could see how big of an impact, and the Swedish people could see what big of an impact they had. Other than that, like when you live in Sweden, Vancouver is not the most covered team in the NHL. It's like Henrik Lundqvist from New York Rangers, and actually Detroit with all the Swedes that one era. So, but obviously, Swedish people know definitely how Dan and Hank treat other people, and what they have done for the NHL and the league.
Man, we got to get that change going back to Thomas Gradin and Matthias Olund and Naslund and all of these guys. We got to get that. Elias Pettersson's here now. That's got to be the team that gets covered the most.
Yeah, no, but you're right, though. Now, like you said, like if it's entertainment or entertaining players like Elias is, definitely you cover those players more. So nowadays it's Vancouver Canucks is right up there, and Swedish people knows much more about the NHL in general, but they don't know more about the Canucks than they did before.
Well, you got to see Elias Pettersson last night. What were your impressions?
No, he's really tricky. He can get lost in games sometimes, but every time he gets the puck, you can see how much respect he has from opponents. They have to back off because he's always doing something tricky and not the way it's supposed to be played. So that's awesome to watch.
You know, what do you mean by, you know, not the way it's supposed to? Like, he's unconventional and he can create unique opportunities, or, you know, are you more about a
yes,
team game kind of thing?
No. He's playing the team game, definitely. Like, he's looking, he definitely plays team game. Like, he is really fast. And, like, what I mean by that, he finds balance. He's almost like a little bit like Datsyuk. He makes you really uncomfortable. He makes you on your outside edge, it makes defensemen do things that they really don't want to or doesn't feel comfortable with, things like that. And that's fun to watch. And that's not easy things to do, to get the opponent to do things he's not comfortable with. But Elias can do that, and he does stuff really fast, and he thinks the game fast.
Obviously, you're back here for Sedin Week, but you get to see some of your other teammates from your couple of years in Vancouver as well. What's that experience been like over the last couple of days?
Oh, I haven't seen too many yet. Hopefully, I see them tonight and tomorrow. But it's always great to be here, and also like this is memories for me, like coming back and sharing those moments with former players and staff in general. To see that's so much fun, and unfortunately, this is memories. I shouldn't say unfortunately, but it is memories, and I'm great to have them, and it's good memories too. So I'm really looking forward to always come back to Vancouver.
You know, we hear so much about their competitiveness, their humor. Is there a story or a memory you can share from your time with them, either on the road or something like that, where they, you know, exhibited that competitiveness or that humor?
Oh, humor, I don't know. That's kind of – I haven't seen that yet. No, I haven't seen it. But one thing I can share, like, they always thought the same way. They thought almost identical all the time. And I remember they played one game – or we played one game. And it was Dan or Hank, I don't know. But one got the puck on the tooth and broke it. And we had a morning skate the day after before we went to Edmonton. And on the bus to Edmonton, I don't know if it was Dan or Hank, but this is the same tooth was shot at the practice, the morning practice. So he ended up with, like, the same tooth was broken for, like, almost on the same time. So that was something I remember, just a fluky thing. From their time here, obviously. It was more stuff than that, but that's just one thing I remember.
I got to ask you before we let you go. Bick was asking about the humor, and that's not a trait that everybody associates with the Sedins. Everybody in Vancouver loved that commercial they did with the NHL back in the day, but they were always embarrassed about it. Did you ever see it, and if so, what did you think about it?
The Dancing Twins?
Yeah, yeah, it was awesome.
Oh, yeah. I thought it was awesome. But they were probably very uncomfortable to do that. And I had never seen them dance. So for them to dance, I have to obviously go on. If I want to see them dance, I have to put on that commercial. But I thought it was one of the best ever, I should say, especially since I know them and know, like, they must have come into the league and they did everything that the staff was asking them to do. Like, you have to go to a commercial here. It's like, okay. Nowadays, I don't think they would have done that, but yeah. It's great to watch.
Yeah, probably not, but we're on the same page. We loved it as well. Hey, we loved our conversation with you and catching up. Enjoy the rest of the week in Vancouver, and thank you very much for making time.
Oh, thank you, guys. Have a good one.
We will. You too. That is Michael Samuelson. I loved that commercial.
So
Canucks
great.
Fans loved that commercial. I think anybody who liked hockey loved that commercial.
I mean, that's still a great hockey commercial. Like, the NHL at times hasn't put out their players in front of cameras for those moments.
And they were always embarrassed by it.
Sure.
They were always a little bit sheepish about it, but they were so good, which is why it worked.
They crushed it. It was funny. Last night on the program, Sat was talking about how he auditioned to be one of the guys in the room.
Really?
Like one of the guys at the bachelor party. He auditioned, didn't get it, obviously. But, you know, just a link in the city that Sat Shaw could have been maybe the guy with the boombox.
That was just ahead of his time. Now there's a guy that looks almost exactly like him doing almost every second commercial that I see. If this had been 2019, 2020, Sat would have got the part for sure.
Yeah. But it's weird. Like, but that commercial is part of the Sedin lore in this city, right? Everyone here just loves it. And, you know, the line as they're walking down the hallway, right? It's like, what'd you get? I got a loony. I got a toony. It's okay, cool. It's everything about it was so perfect.
Yeah, and everything about this week so far has shaped up to be perfect, including the win by the team on the ice last night, Legends Night. Now we transform into Sedin Night for tomorrow, which is the jerseys going to the banners. I'm going to remind everybody again, and we'll do this tomorrow a lot as well, 6 o'clock. The ceremony starts at 6 o'clock. If you're not fortunate enough to have tickets or aren't going to the game, make sure you've either got the PVR going or you're sitting in front of your television. If you can't be there, if you're going to be in your car, if you just want to listen to it, if you want the audio, we're going to carry that Sedin retirement, the jersey retirement, live for you right here on your home of the Canucks, Sportsnet 650. It should be fantastic tomorrow night at Rogers Arena. We'll talk about what happened last night at Rogers Arena, about where the Canucks are and how the landscape in the Pacific Division is changing before our very eyes with some injury news that has come down in the last few days. This is Canucks Central on your home of the Canucks, Sportsnet 650.
Now more of Canucks Central on the official home of the Vancouver Canucks, Sportsnet 650.
Miller, left circle with a slap shot. Blocked by Ekholm, comes back to Hughes, down to the right circle. Pettersson, in front, Brandon Sutter scores! Make it 9-for-10 on the power play against Nashville this year for the Canucks.
And then it was 10-for-11. And then the Canucks said, we'll take our foot off the gas a little bit here.
The regression, it declined.
76.9% against the Predators for the season. Canucks win 6-2. They get back on track, maintain their perch atop the Pacific Division. As I mentioned earlier, Scott Rintoul, Bick Nizar, this is Canucks Central. There was a period not to like, specifically the second period, not to like for the Vancouver Canucks last night. But other than that, when you win 6-2 and you switch up all the lines and you've got Zach MacEwen scoring goals and Jake Virtanen hitting a career high with 16 and power play goals, everybody's padding their stats, Quinn Hughes with, there's not much not to like at the end of it. There's a second period where you're not happy about it.
Well, they're still giving up chances in the first and third.
Sure, not like they were in the second, though.
Mm-hmm.
Not like that. And Jacob Markstrom, I know Quinn Hughes was the first star last night on the broadcast, and I understand why he had three assists. He was fantastic once again. Even that opening sequence, which doesn't result in a goal, and he skates in, buys time, drop pass, ends up being a shot. Every night, every single night, it feels like we're having the same conversation.
He's good. He's good. And look, the reason we do it is because he's putting up astronomical numbers. We were just chatting here.
He's at 44 points right now.
Like if he got 40, I think 35, everyone would have stopped saying, okay, what kind of player this is. And 35 points would have been enough to have any doubters.
Well, if you had even just issued that before the Canucks season, what would you sign for to a Canucks fan? I think most people would have signed for 40 points in a heartbeat.
Yeah.
Heartbeat. I will take 40 points from a rookie defenseman in this organization, most people would have signed.
I was expecting 40, but I thought it would be a slog to get there. He's going to surpass it.
He's going to take a run at 60,
crush
man.
It.
He's going to take a run at 60.
And it's not even just the points. Again, we're talking about, okay, can you be good and produce? Well, he's being great and producing. Right, it's not just that he's up on the box score; has a major impact how this team plays 5-on-5. Again, not just offensively, he is shutting down teams. He is being strong defensively, pretty good at the blue line. You know, able to use his feet and his mobility to ward away oncoming attacks. He's good, you know, in battles, or he's improving in battles. We thought it'd be deficiencies. Nothing in this game is deficient. Nothing. There's parts of it that are average, and because he's a rookie, they're obviously going to improve at some point, but everything meets a very high standard, and then some of it goes beyond.
And I think the other part that has been impressive so far is we're nearing the 60-game mark, and he isn't getting worn down. Mm-hmm. And it's going to be a concern until it isn't. It has to be because almost every rookie we've ever seen in this league at that age, at some point, they get a little worn down. So it's not something you can say, well, he's not ever going to hit the rookie wall. But I will say to this point, there's no indication of that coming.
I mean, we didn't really say that about like Miro Heiskanen. I guess we did and just never showed up. Is it different for D-Man? Is it? I'm not sure what I'm not even sure what the answer is, but I get more convinced that it's not coming. And I'm not sure why, if it's the way he skates, he's able to be more efficient with his movement, he's able to conserve energy in a certain way because he's not constantly exerting it because of how well he's able to separate and not take contact. Is that a reason for it? Whatever it is, I'm getting less and less worried that it's going to hit.
Did you think we'd be having a conversation about who had the better rookie season, Elias Pettersson or Quinn Hughes?
You know, that's such an interesting conversation, too, because Elias Pettersson Quinn Hughes has the benefit of having Elias Pettersson in the lineup. Elias Pettersson didn't.
And JT Miller.
And all those players, right? So if you just look at
there's a lot of guys.
Yeah, if you just look at the totality of the season, it's a fair statement to say that Quinn Hughes is having a better rookie year than Elias Pettersson.
Maybe. But, I don't know.
But when you consider the, you know,
the context.
The context, you know, what Elias Pettersson did last year with, you know, Jacob Markstrom wasn't even Jacob Markstrom yet. That plays a part in that too. I still think I would lean towards Pettersson.
Yeah, but the fact that we're even having a conversation about it, and I'm with you, Pettersson, because he all of a sudden as a rookie becomes the face of the franchise, the leading scorer, Calder winner, all of that. Whereas you mentioned Pettersson's here. You've got a bolstered roster around Pettersson and Besser and Horvat and what they've done on the blue line as well.
Myers, yeah.
No question. So
a healthy Tanev.
Quinn Hughes benefits from all of that, not to take away from his rookie season, but I would lean towards Pedersen. The fact that we're even having this conversation is something spectacular, and the young man continues to wow people around this league.
I'm here for the conversation if the list of accolades continues to stack up for Quinn Hughes.
Like, oh, sure.
If he wins a Calder, if he breaks, you were just pointing out the record to me, like what if that happens?
So Doug Lidster's 63 points in a season is the most any Canuck defenseman has ever had in a single year.
Rookie or not.
The rookie record's 56. Yeah. It looks like Quinn Hughes is going to track that down. He's 12 points back of that right now. Again, this is all assuming health.
Yes.
But if he stays healthy, it's a lot to ask for 20 more points down the stretch. But I'll say this. If that power play gets hot for a couple of weeks, he is going to not only take a run at 60 points, which only two Canuck defensemen have ever hit, he's going to take a run at the most points ever for a blue liner in this organization in a single season.
And if he does that, then that conversation of what we were just talking about might be over. Like, that's a stunning mark.
Like, he's going to get to 50 points. He's going to get there as long as he's healthy. The last time the Canucks had a 50-point defenseman was Christian Ehrhoff, and he hit 50 on the nose with the best team this franchise has ever assembled for a single season. And he hit 50 on the nose. And this team that we're watching this year is nowhere near as good as the team in 2010-2011. Revelation. He's going to surpass that total.
And like, that's what's exciting, right? It's when this team gets to a spot when they're in the hierarchy of a 2011-style team. They don't have to be exactly that, but you're in that conversation for elite cup contenders. Now what is he putting up? Is he going to put up those Mike Green years? Is he going to put up those Brent Burns-style numbers? Is he going to put up Eric Carlson-like numbers? That's what's encouraging. And it's going to come at more than just power play. That power play is going to get more consistent and more lethal, and that's what's unreal. But 5-on-5, they're going to dominate at some point because they have two elite guys.
Somebody wants to know what his plus-minus is. He's -4.
So what? It's just, again, it's the context of what season it is. It's his rookie year. I get it. He's not perfect yet. And generally speaking, he's not perfect in general. But he's not a complete... He's still a prospect. This is year one, guys.
Joey in Richmond, watching Quinn get position on way bigger guys to win puck battles is awesome. Can only imagine as he fills out, gets tougher and stronger a la Petey this year. Give me that new age Niedermeyer vibes.
I mean, one of the best to watch and one of the best to do it. Obviously, Captain Canada, but...
I'm not sure if he'll ever put on quite the frame that Scott Niedermeyer had.
Right.
Brian Leetch is the guy that is... more comparable to me, and a lot of people have made that comparison.
I know Phil Housley gets mentioned a lot, too. And I would like to see a bit more directness to Quinn Hughes' game. I'm not even sure if it's directness, but perhaps it's freedom. Is he given total trust at times? Because on the power play, especially when they're breaking out, it feels like he relegates to... oh, I'm supposed to drop pass, I'll drop pass. I would love a bit more freedom and say, hey, just read the play. If you feel like you can take it, go take it. If you beat the first guy and the second guy's not close enough and it's just you versus two defenders and you got two stationary objects on the outside, just go take it. It's 3-on-2. Go take it.
Scott Rinto, Bick Nazar. This is Canuck Central. Subway text line 650-650 if you want in on this conversation. A lot of different places we can go with last night. How about the guys who got into the lineup in Zach McEwen, Justin Bailey? What did you think of each of their performances?
McEwen really strong. Really, really strong. There's still things that he needs to clean up, but...
scores the opening goal.
He scores the opening goal. And what I really liked about that play is the Canucks had prolonged puck possession. That's one of the things we were talking about yesterday. If you start extracting more out of your offensive opportunities, A, you suddenly don't give up as much defensive, and then that didn't necessarily bear out yesterday, but you wear opponents down, right? Can you start going for more than just the one and done? Become a dominant puck possession team. We were just talking with Michael Samuelson, he was echoing that of, you know, those puck possession teams is what really helps. And you start using your size. McEwen, big body, obviously. And that's something he can do, work well against the walls, and pair him with JT Miller. And, you know,
he'll make his teammates better. And he got an opportunity, buried it.
Justin Bailey? There were a lot of people online because the first opportunity to see Justin Bailey, and everybody has that anticipation that we're pretty excited about what they saw. It's limited capacity, but what did you think?
I didn't notice him negatively, so that's a positive, right? And
he was noticeable because of his speed, certainly.
Yes. And there's a like there is a lot of value in being average. Yes, we want every player to be Elias Pettersson. That'd be all great, but that's not a reality. And when you get lower and lower down in your lineup, and this is why, you know, fans critique at Brandon Sutter, Jay Beagle, whatever player you want to use as your lightning rod.
Nice deflection by Sutter last night, by the way.
Yes.
That was nice on the power play.
We'll get to that too. But if you can be, if you're down in the lineup and you can have no negatives and there's an absence of negatives in your game, that's a positive. And can you just provide value that way? Brendan Gaunce was great at that. Almost nothing happened on the ice when Brendan Gaunce played. He didn't score, and that frustrated a lot of people. Didn't get scored on a lot. And, you know, controlled play. That's value on your fourth line. Can you eat some minutes? If that's what Bailey's going to provide, that's a bonus.
Yeah, they were just fine last night. Both guys fit in. And you would think, given what happened against Nashville, you would think it's a very similar lineup tomorrow night. Probably another Markstrom start, given the fact that it's Sedin night and all of that. I would think that he starts tomorrow night. We were speculating yesterday, and again, it's not that it's a big issue, but you do wonder when Thatcher Demko gets his next start. Markstrom can have a full week off if he plays tomorrow and doesn't play on Sunday. That's a full week of rest at this point of the season.
Huge. Huge. And the schedule is their friend right now, right? It's going to get tough in March when they play 16 and 31, I believe. But the schedule's your friend. Take advantage of it. I think, yeah, you give him tomorrow. It's a big, iconic night. He's always playing well. He's dialed in, given what happened yesterday. So give him tomorrow. And then Sunday or Wednesday, you have to split those up. You got to split those up between I'm not sure if I even care which one Demko gets, because then after Sunday, that's basically a week, 6 days. They play on Saturday versus Boston. That's an opportunity for Markstrom to get back in.
Three Pacific Division teams in action last night. All three win. Calgary, same 6-2 winners down in San Jose. Canucks obviously take care of the Predators. Arizona comes back from 2-0 down in Montreal. They were down 2-0 in the first 2 minutes of that game. Fought back to win 3-2. A much-needed win for the Coyotes. They'll play tonight back-to-backs. They take on the Leafs tonight. You've got Vegas playing tonight as well. And you've also got Edmonton hosting Chicago in the game that impacts the standings the most in the Western Conference as far as a single entity goes.
Okay, which game are you most interested in?
I'm most interested in Edmonton-Chicago
for
a couple of reasons.
Okay, that's where I am too, right?
Yeah, I'm most interested in that game for a couple of reasons. One, because the Blackhawks are coming in here tomorrow night. The Blackhawks are pushing for a wild card spot. But also, Connor McDavid's out the next 2 to 3 weeks with a quad injury. Let's see how the Edmonton Oilers respond. And generally, there's a positive response in the early going. Hey,
for sure,
guys, we got to be – look at what has happened in Calgary. Mark Giordano goes down. First two games, they find a way to get wins.
It's the same thing in football. If a quarterback goes down, you can overcome it if everyone gives, you know, 5% more. There's a reliance on star players at times that, okay, this guy can handle it. And when that safety net's gone, everyone kind of maximizes their performance. We'd love to believe that athletes do that every day. It's not true. We talk a lot about that a lot. Is human beings just don't maximize and optimize their performance every day. That's just how it goes. Same for professional athletes. And so in this moment, when you need that jolt, when you need that kick, how are the rest of the Oilers going to respond? It's kind of going to fall on Draisaitl, Nugent Hopkins, but if everyone can give a little bit more, you can cover a short-term injury.
Yamamoto's been really good as well.
Yes.
Let's see what he does in the absence of Connor McDavid.
However, I'll still say I'm very worried for them.
And I think most people have been worried for the Oilers most of the season. Oh, when's the air going to come out of the balloon? They've got a tough schedule. Their next five games are difficult, starting tonight with Chicago. Then they've got Tampa. Tampa Bay is ridiculous right now.
Having to go on the road, like Tampa Bay, Florida, Carolina, Boston, it's basically the same trip Vancouver just went through. I think Boston's a home game, though.
It is. It's the last one of the five.
Yeah. Like, that's a tough run here. This stretch here is kind of going to define their season, much in the same way this last eight games for the Canucks could have defined it, and they come out with Four wins and an extra point out of that. So they get 9 points out of those potential 16. So that's kind of a win for the Canucks. But for the Oilers, this is going to define their season, especially without Connor McDavid.
Quick aside, Tampa Bay, 19-2-1 in the last 22 games.
Oh, it's ridiculous.
Canucks won 14 of 20.
Yeah.
Which is awesome. 19-2-1. It's insane. It's insane.
They're finding a peak. And you've got to do that at various points in the season. They are hitting theirs at a pretty good time. Because they'll have a lull here. They'll have a lull, but it's, do you plateau or do you drop, right? Can you just kind of go along and then peak one more time? That's the important part. The results will fluctuate, but are they going to hit another peak late March into April? It seems like they've learned their lesson pretty well here.
Yes, it does. And they would appear to be better positioned for the playoffs, given the adversity they encountered last year and at the beginning of this season. Scott Rentoul, Bick Nizar, I had my say on what I heard last night, because part of the story with what happened on Legends Night was Trevor Linden being back in the building.
Mm-hmm.
Trevor Linden was on the first intermission. Trevor Linden, by the way, will be on the program today. Do not miss that interview.
5 o'clock.
5 o'clock, Trevor Linden. He was only on for 3.5 minutes or so with Dan Murphy last night, so you can't have as much of an extended conversation, but there was a lot there, and good on Murph for asking the question. It was on the minds of every single Canucks fan.
Absent from some of the festivities so far this season, can we ask you, is the relationship fractured between you and the organization?
You know what, Murph? I'm thrilled to be back. It's been a lot of fun seeing some old friends. There were so many good people in this organization. I had a great visit with the coaching staff, Travis and his group, and it's just fun to be part of this week, and Daniel and Henrik are so well-deserving, and I'm honored to be here.
Any anxiety coming into the building?
A little bit, for sure. I'd be lying if there wasn't. Certainly some mixed feelings. I've had a long history with this organization, 32 years now, but all good, and just excited for the week.
Can you take any pride with what the team has done so far this season?
You know what? I don't know about that. I obviously came in 14, and it was a difficult spot to be in, no question about it. Any way you go, it was going to be a tough few years, but it's nice to see some great young players, coming up. Judd Brackett's done a tremendous job drafting, and Travis has done an amazing job with this group. His staff deserves a lot of credit. I don't think they're getting the credit they deserve. Their best players are their youngest players, and they're playing the right way, and they're leading division. So they've done it right for sure.
What did you hear?
I know what I didn't hear. I heard a lot of praise for important people that are in the organization, and we've talked a lot about the importance of what Judd Brackett brings to the organization. But yeah, there was an omission. And here's the thing. I saw you tweet about it too. He speaks really well, and he knows. He's never going to speak ill of the franchise, but he knows what he's saying. That's the way I hear that.
Yeah, you knew the question was coming.
Yeah.
And to me, it fell into the category of this. If you don't have something nice to say about somebody, you don't say anything.
Precisely.
Which speaks to where he views the relationship right now between himself and ownership and himself and current management. At least that's what I heard.
And what's also important here is,
he wasn't going to go on there and bring up ownership, bring up management and say, yeah, hey, we had a bad parting of the ways, and he wasn't going to say that. That's not Trevor Linden's way.
And it's also Sedin week, mm-hmm. right? Like, this whole week, and I know there's conversations going on about Ryan Kesler, all this.
Hey, Trevor Linden would have preferred that question he didn't have to address. He would have preferred that, but he understood that it was coming.
And everyone that we're hearing from this week, Michael Samuelson included, we could sit here and talk about, okay, what's going on with Michael Samuel with his life. But Michael Samuelson, when he joins us, he knows he's here to talk with the Sedins. Everybody that's in town right now and that wants to honor Daniel Henrik Sedin know that they are here to do that. And while there's a demand to get certain answers for past stories and reconciled relationships and all that, everybody that is here to honor Daniel and Henrik Sedin. And so there's an importance placed from those parties to say, we don't want to cause a distraction that takes away from a celebration to two amazing teammates and two amazing individuals. So have those demands. I get it. But we have to realize that there's something bigger here as well. That it's about two players this whole week.
Of course. Of course. But this situation was different. And this situation is different because It is Legends Night, mm-hmm. and he is as big a legend in this organization as anybody not named Daniel Henrich. Or he's as big as those two. He's as close to those two as in terms of greatest Canucks as you can get. I have them at the top, and I have Trevor Linden right there, just underneath them. And it, just because they surpassed everything he set the bar for, whether it was production, whether it was taking a team deep in the play, all of those
humanitarian
things.
Yeah.
All of it. All of it. They surpassed it. But Trevor Linden's the guy who was the standard bearer before that. And he was the greatest Canuck of all time prior to that.
But you're right. Like, these are important questions to ask. And Murph asks them. We'll ask them. All very valid and important. But if you think you're going to get a, what was the term you used? Mudslinging?
Yeah, he's not going to do that.
Not going to do that.
No, and nor should he. And yet, part of the reason I believe Trevor Linden said what he said last night is because he wasn't going to be completely disingenuous.
I'm sure, yeah. Everything he said, factual.
Anxiety about coming back into the building. Yeah, yeah. It was a little bit there. I had mixed feelings about coming back, he said, which is completely understandable. And people have talked about whether the franchise needs to repair the relationship with him. Hopefully one day that happens. But in any relationship that has a fracture, both parties have to be ready.
Mm-hmm.
Both parties have to be ready to make that up. And when Trevor Linden is ready, maybe that will occur. I'm not sure.
It's you know, you walk around the building a bit yesterday, and everyone's ready for Sedin Week. But that was one of the things I heard a lot, is people were thrilled to see Trevor back in the building.
And so they should be. We'll be thrilled to hear him on the program today. You guys got a big program.
Man, it's going to be a packed show today. Elliot Friedman, Alex Auld, Trevor Linden, Mike Bernstein, who, of course, spent a lot of time with Daniel Henrich Sedin and now with the Giants, and Jim Houston as well.
It's finally packed. A day when you don't even need the hosts. And yet they'll both show up today.
Yeah.
Great-looking Reach Deep coming up as well. Daniel Sedin. He's got one of those jerseys that's going to go to the rafters tomorrow night. He'll be on at 2 o'clock. Former teammate Shane O'Brien on with Reach Deep as well. As mentioned, Trevor Linden highlighting a stacked program today. Don't move anywhere away from Sportsnet 650. You might miss something pretty important. I'll be back tomorrow morning, 9 o'clock, on what is Sedin Day officially. The jerseys go to the rafters. We'll be bringing the show live from Rogers Arena. Thanks for listening. Reach Deep is up next in your home of the Canucks, Sportsnet 650.